Have you ever gotten feedback that just felt, well, less like help and more like a personal attack?
Oh, definitely. Or that feeling of trying to project confidence when you don't really feel it.
Exactly. Touches on something fundamental, doesn't it? How we actually function.
Right. How we take in that feedback, you know, the good and the bad, it really determines whether we grow or just retreat into our shells.
And that's precisely what we're digging into today. We're looking at how we can nurture these growth mindsets and actually construct confidence.
Today, we're hitting chapter 8. It's called Nurturing Growth Mindsets Confidence Construction.
Yeah, in this chapter, it really gets practical. It's not just what confidence is, but, you know, how do you actually build it?
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today is to really unpack that, how confidence gets built, and importantly, how criticism, something we often dread, can actually be used well,
mm-hmm.
used to help growth, not block it. It's about building solid foundations for yourself and for others, too.
Right. It feels like the bedrock for a lot of the learning and improving stuff we've discussed. And the book starts right off saying that for criticism to even work, to be helpful, certain things have to be in place. What's condition number one? The absolute must have.
Self-confidence. Plain and simple. The book defines it as like that core belief in your own ability, your potential,
yeah.
Especially the belief you can keep trying after a setback and, you know, eventually get there.
So if you don't really believe in yourself deep down, then criticism, it just crushes you, even if it's meant well.
Exactly. Without that feeling that you can improve, criticism doesn't sound like feedback. It sounds like proof you're just not good enough. And the source ties this right back to that fixed mindset idea. If you think abilities are just fixed, like eye color, then criticism feels like a verdict on you, not on something you did, something you could change. So people who feel that way, they often just avoid criticism altogether. It hurts too much.
Wow. Okay, so building confidence isn't just nice. It's essential for criticism to even be possible. How does the book say we actually build that confidence?
It points to three main things. First, the reward you naturally feel from just putting in effort. Second, hitting personal goals you set for yourself. And third, maybe the biggest one for this chapter, is something called constructive praise. These things, especially seeing your effort pay off and having that process acknowledged, that's what builds that belief you can learn and adapt.
Precisely. And, you know, this connects directly to Carol Dweck's work, which gets mentioned.
Ah, yeah. Her research is fascinating about, like, the problems with just praising intelligence. You're so smart instead of effort.
Mm-hmm. It can lead to that fixed mindset, makes kids especially afraid to even try hard things because they might fail and not look smart anymore.
So interesting. Okay, so self-confidence is number one.
Constructive praise is a really key ingredient then. Let's hold on to that. What's the second major condition the book mentions for criticism to land properly?
You need to trust and respect the person who's giving you the feedback. I mean, that feels pretty intuitive, right? If you don't trust their intentions or you don't think much of their opinion.
Yeah, why would you listen? Especially to something difficult.
Exactly. And that trust, that respect, it's not automatic. It has to be earned.
Right. How does the book say that happens? How do you build that trust?
It says it comes from showing you understand over time. When someone consistently shows they get your process, your struggles, and they genuinely seem to care about your growth, well, that builds trust. And often that understanding is shown through that constructive praise we just talked about. It signals they're invested in you, not just some outcome.
Okay, I see the connection now. So the trust and respect, they're built using the same kind of approach that builds the confidence itself. It's about showing you understand and you value their effort.
Precisely. Which brings us right to the third condition. The criticism itself, it has to be constructive. And it needs to be delivered in a way that feels, you know, positive and respectful. Even if you have confidence and trust, if the criticism is just harsh or personal, it's not going to work.
Okay, let's dig into that term constructive praise then, because the book makes a really crucial point here. It feels almost backwards sometimes. What's the big distinction it makes?
It's all about focusing on effort before you focus on results. Constructive praise, the kind that helps a growth mindset, notices and values the process, the work, the journey of learning.
Effort before results. Yeah, see, that does feel different. We usually cheer for the win, right? The gold medal, the perfect score, the successful launch. Those are results.
Right. Those are the outcomes. The knowledge gained, the project finished, the game won. Effort is, well, it's the trying, the practicing, the struggling through the hard parts, the willingness to change tactics when something isn't working. And the book argues there's a real danger when we only praise the result.
Okay, what's the danger? What's the problem with just saying, great job, you won?
When you only praise the outcome, like, A, you're so smart, or this project is amazing, you're a natural, You're only saying the result is valuable. You kind of ignore, or at least don't acknowledge, all the hard work, the frustration they might have pushed through, the practice, the messy bits that got them there.
And how does that feed into the fixed mindset again?
It reinforces it big time. Praising only the result tells the person their value comes from some fixed trait they have, being smart or a natural or a genius, not from the effort they put in. The source actually points to research suggesting this kind of praise while it feels good in the moment.
Yeah, who doesn't like being called a genius?
Right, but it can actually make people less confident down the road, less resilient when things get tough, because they haven't learned to value the process of working through difficulty. They start thinking success is just about having it, whatever it is. And if they struggle later, they think, oh, maybe I just don't have it.
Wow. Okay, hang on. So telling my kid, you're so smart, when they ace a test might actually undermine their confidence for future challenges. That really flips the script on how I thought about praise. Can you give some concrete examples? Like, what would you say instead?
Sure. So instead of you're so intelligent, maybe try it. Wow, the persistence you showed tackling that tricky problem was really impressive. Or instead of just great score. Well, maybe I really liked how you adjusted your approach when the first way didn't work. That showed real effort and thinking. You're pointing to the actions, the struggle, the learning process itself. The chapter uses this really vivid analogy to tie this all together. The bridge analogy. Criticism is described as, what, bulky and heavy?
Yeah, bulky and heavy. And you can't just, you know, dump that heavy load on someone without the right support structure. It'll cause damage.
So you need a bridge strong enough to carry that weight.
Precisely. To deliver criticism effectively, you need that strong bridge.
And how do we build it? What are the components?
According to the source, you need two main things: a permit and the actual construction material.
Okay, a permit.
The permit to actually cross that bridge with your heavy criticism is the trust the other person has in you.
Which we build through constructive praise, showing we care about their growth.
You got it. That earns you the permit. And then the construction material for the bridge itself. It's self-confidence, that belief in your ability to handle things, to learn. And that confidence is built primarily by
rewarding effort with constructive praise. Wow, okay.
So constructive praise is doing double duty. It's literally building the bridge material and earning you the permit to use it.
It really is the linchpin in this whole thing.
It seems to be. And the chapter also stresses you need to maintain this bridge. You can't just build it and forget it.
Right. Delivering criticism recklessly without care, that wears it down fast.
Yeah. Like driving overloaded trucks over it. Yeah. It damages the confidence, erodes the trust, but delivering it carefully and gently, respectfully, focusing on growth, that keeps the bridge strong.
So the criticism can actually get across and be useful, not harmful.
Exactly. It allows it to be received as helpful input.
This really all points towards needing a pretty generous amount of positive reinforcement, doesn't it? The big takeaway from Chapter 8 seems to be nurture growth, make criticism work, build and maintain this confidence bridge through regular constructive praise of effort from someone you trust.
And interestingly, the source suggests there's almost a mathematical aspect to this, a ratio.
Ah, yes, the ratio. It mentions a Harvard study on business teams.
That's the one. They looked at high-performing teams. And get this.
What did they find?
Among the highest-performing teams, the average ratio was 5.6 positive comments for every single negative one.
Wow. 5.6 to 1, nearly 6 positives for every negative.
Subsequent research debated the exact precision of that number. Follow-ups in 2015, 2018 explored that. But the core finding held strong. You need a significantly positive ratio for teams to thrive, to feel safe, to grow.
That's way more skewed towards the positive than I think most people imagine. It's not just about balance, like 1.1. It's overwhelmingly positive.
It really flips the script on balanced feedback, doesn't it? And what's fascinating is that this finding isn't isolated.
Where else does it show up?
John Dottman's research, decades of studying marriages, he found that the most stable, happy relationships also had a similar ratio of around 5 positive interactions for every negative one.
5 to 1 again in marriages. That's incredible.
It suggests this might be a really fundamental principle for healthy human connection, for environments where people feel secure enough to actually learn and grow, whether it's a team or a relationship.
So for you listening, how aware are you of this? Not just, you know, the idea of praising effort, but the sheer volume, that ratio, when you give feedback, or even when you receive it, or how you talk to yourself, are you building those bridges? Is that ratio anywhere near 5.1 or 6.1?
It really makes you stop and think about the texture of your interactions, doesn't it? How often are you actively acknowledging effort? Dweck's work, as we mentioned, consistently shows praising intelligence can backfire, while praising effort fosters growth mindsets and better ways of handling mistakes.
Okay, what else?
Well, self-determination theory suggests that praise supporting autonomy, like noticing effort and progress, boosts motivation, whereas controlling praise, like just praising ability, can actually undermine it.
Interesting.
Then you've got research by Neff showing growth mindsets link to more resilience. Galassi found effort praise is better for self-esteem than ability praise. And Hattie and Yates found feedback on effort and progress is really effective for learning.
So it all kind of points in the same direction. Focus on the process, the effort, the growth.
Pretty much. Value the journey, not just the destination.
Remember, way back in chapter one, we talked about that attention spectrum, fear versus curiosity.
Right. Fear narrows our focus, makes us rigid, defensive. Curiosity opens us up.
And building confidence through this constructive praise method from chapter eight, valuing effort, fostering belief in growth that directly combats the fear of failure, the fear of judgment.
Yeah, if you know your effort is seen and valued, and that effort leads to growth, then setbacks feel less threatening, less like the end of the world.
Which makes it easier to stay curious, open to learning, engaged, kind of like we discussed with that idea of childlike curiosity and living in the now.
Exactly. Less fear equals more room for curiosity and learning.
And think about blame cycles and forgiveness. Feeling like a victim often comes from feeling helpless, right? But building confidence through effort-based praise gives you agency. It shows your actions matter. You're less likely to feel stuck. And forgiveness, letting go of ego and blame, that really connects with the humility you need to actually hear criticism and learn from it instead of just getting defensive.
Yeah, good point. And self-worth, too. We talked about how real self-worth comes partly from contributing value to others, helping others build their confidence and growth mindset through this kind of constructive interaction. That feels like a really powerful way to build mutual value.
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
And remember, the illusion of adulthood. Acknowledging we're all just learners, basically.
Yeah.
That perspective is vital here. It helps you receive criticism with grace. Okay, I'm still learning. And deliver it with patience, knowing everyone's on a journey. That is the growth mindset.
It really weaves together nicely, doesn't it? Creating this much richer understanding.
Now, the chapter wraps up with a section on religious perspectives. It's interesting to see how some of these older traditions maybe echo the ideas we've been talking about.
Yeah, it's less about theology and more about seeing how these psychological principles, valuing effort, good communication, self-belief, have sort of surfaced in different ways across cultures for a long time.
Right. Connecting back to that starting point about self-confidence being foundational, like Ephesians in Christianity talks about using words to build others up.
Which sounds a lot like the spirit of constructive praise, doesn't it? Helpful talk.
Yeah. And there's a hadith in Islam mentioned focusing on intention. The effort, plan, the action being what counts for a reward.
Again, that echoes the effort over results idea.
Then the Dhammapada in Buddhism talks about praise and blame being fleeting and encourages truthful, instructive speech without harshness.
Which definitely resonates with delivering criticism respectfully, maintaining that bridge.
And the Bhagavad Gita, focusing on doing the work without being attached to the results.
Mm-hmm. The effort itself is the focus. Very much aligns with praising effort.
And even the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, the idea that belief shapes reality, seems to connect to that need for foundational self-confidence, believing in your potential.
It's quite striking how these threads appear across different systems. It's not trying to make a religious argument, but just showing these concepts aren't entirely new. They have deep historical roots.
It really shows the universality of these ideas about how we grow and connect.
Absolutely. Okay, so wrapping up our deep dive on chapter 8, the big takeaway. Building confidence by celebrating effort is absolutely key. It's the foundation for a growth mindset. It builds the bridge of trust that lets constructive criticism actually work, but only if you maintain that generous praise to criticism ratio.
It gives you a really practical lens to look at your interactions. Why do some conversations build people up while others just don't? This offers an explanation.
So here's the thought to leave you with today, thinking about this crucial confidence bridge. How aware are you really of the praise to criticism ratio in your own life, with your colleagues, your family, your friends, even just in your own internal monologue? Is your bridge strong enough to carry the feedback needed for growth? Something to think about.
We're past halfway. Great effort. See you next time.